So what is the secret to satisfaction under the sun? This morning we're going to look at this huge experiment, and I hope we can learn from his findings. Because this is a secret that we'd all like to know, isn't it? I mean, throughout your day, throughout your week, what is it that makes you most unhappy? Like, what is it that really just stops you and keeps you from being happy? I'd be happier if this person had more respect of me. I'd be happier if my husband was more romantic. I'd be happier if my wife was more intimate. I'd be happier if I had a better car, more money, a better position at work, right? More time to myself, even. So Solomon says, you know what? I'll try it. I'll try all of it. Like, all of it. And he is going to try all of it this morning. And you know what? He's going to say, I'm qualified to do this experiment. So keep reading in Ecclesiastes chapter 1. He says, I, the preacher, have been king over Jerusalem. Verse 14, I have seen everything that is done under the sun. Verse 16, I've acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me, and my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And he's able to be honest about it all. Some of us wouldn't. Some of us would look around at the world and we'd still kind of have this jade about, well, I don't know, maybe I just didn't try it just right. Solomon's going to be completely honest with us this morning. Remember the point of last message? Solomon was honest with us there, wasn't he? Life under the sun is, you tell me, life under the sun is empty, right? You can't fill up what is empty inside of you with something that's on this earth. It takes something beyond that. Solomon's going to be honest, and he's going to shoot straight with us this morning in a way that others could not or would not. So are you ready for this big experiment? Here we go. We're about to jump into this test case from Solomon, and in true Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde fashion, Solomon becomes the lab rat in his own experiment. Leave it to the expert, he says, and that would be me. Okay, I am the expert on life under the sun. Remember me, I'm the guy, you looked at me last time, I'm the guy, I'm Albert Einstein, Bill Gates, Hugh Hefner, and Brad Pitt put together, right? Remember me, the total package. I can tell you what it's like down here. So let's look at the grand experiment. What is it? What's his test? What's he going to ask of this world? He's going to ask this question, what is the secret to satisfaction? Satisfaction, okay, where can I find it? What will give me something lasting down here on this earth? What's going to fill up what's empty? Now follow the science here, okay? I got beakers and liquids behind me because Solomon's process here is very scientific. So any scientists in the room here? Solomon's going to analyze things. He's going to collect data. He's going to give us some results. And then he's going to offer a conclusion about the data. So Solomon, what are you going to test? Remember, he's the lab rat. He's the litmus paper. Remember litmus paper from science class? Okay, he dips it in different substances and sees what changes color. You see, Solomon is the litmus paper. He's going to put it in and say, is there satisfaction there? So what are the beakers that he's going to dip his life into? That's what we're going to look at over the next chapter here. It starts in chapter 2. Solomon, what are you going to dip into? And Solomon says, everything. No, Solomon, seriously, what are you going to try in your experiment? Everything. And he does. Okay, so follow Solomon here. The first thing he tries, chapter 2, verse 1, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. He first tries partying. Partying, eh? Partying. I mean, this guy knows how to party, but be careful, okay, lest you compare yourself and think that somehow you'll come out on top, right? Like, partying. I mean, like, yeah, this guy parties, but does he know how to partay? Like, you know, okay? Because I've seen Bible parties, right? Like plenty of low-fat organic Doritos and diet root beer to go around, okay? If we got time, maybe we'll play some Bible trivia. And Susie brought Bible charades, okay? So party. Solomon's like, well, you know what? Listen, chapter 2, verse 1. I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this was also vanity. I said of laughter, follow his experiment, it is mad. And of pleasure, what use is it? I search with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly. till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven. So Solomon's first experiment, right, is into the party scene. He tried laughter. He tried pleasure. He drank. These are massive parties. And over and over and over again, it seems, he parties. How massive were they? Well, so in the book of 1 Kings, chapter 4, it talks about what one day's worth of supplies were for the kingdom of Solomon. You ready for this? Here we go. Solomon's provision for one day, 1 Kings 4:22, was 280 pounds of fine flour, 560 pounds of meal, 10 fat oxen, 20 pasture-fed cattle, 100 sheep besides deer, gazelles, roebucks, and fattened fowl. That's a lot of food, okay? That's a ton of food. All estimates say that this could feed upwards of 30,000 people. These parties were so big and frequent that it was said that Judah and Israel were as the sands of the sea. They ate and drank and were happy. And you're like, yes, if I was eating that every day, I'd be happy too, right? Yeah. This guy parties. Over and over again, he brings in comedians to laugh at. His friends join him to drink. He throws all of his resources into partying, and he throws a party that makes your little like Super Bowl bash of 2002. Right? Remember that one? Yeah. Look like kindergarten. Okay. Solomon experiments with partying, but eventually it gets old to him. I mean, eventually there's nothing new to try. His friends are all sitting around and like, Solomon, what are we going to do tonight? And he's like, I don't know. What do you want to do? And they're like, we've done it all. And he goes, yeah. It gets old. So he moves on to his next experiment. What is it? Next, he tries building. And what we see here is Solomon follows the same stage as we do, right? There comes a point where we get tired of goofing off all the time. Hopefully, there comes a point in your life where you get tired of goofing off all the time and you want to build something. I want to do something that lasts. I want to stop wearing sweatpants and walking around with my shirt untucked all the time. Okay, I want something that lasts. And what does he do? Verse 5. He made great works. I built houses. What kind of houses, Solomon, did you build? Okay, so if you know Israel's history, you know that Solomon, during his reign, built the temple for the Lord, right? Massive, glorious, beautiful. The Bible talks about the masonry that went into that. The Bible talks about the glory that the temple of the Lord was. Solomon built that in 7 years. 150,000 or so workers, 7 years, built that house. Solomon says, I built houses. One of the houses that he built, his palace, took him 14 years to build. And it wasn't because he was taking his time. Okay, Solomon's not taking his time with this experiment. He's throwing everything he has at this. So yeah, Solomon had a pretty nice house. Right? And there's permanence to this, right? So when the parties are done, they're done. But when you finish something, you look at it and you say, yes, look at what I've done. Right? You know this feeling, right? You know this feeling, your first car, you sit in it and you just kind of feel the steering wheel. You're like, I don't care what it feels like in here, it's mine. Your first house, you sign the papers, you just look at it. Right? You do some yard work outside. I mean, you could just mow, like just push a mower across your yard and you still got grass clippings on your legs and you still smell like gasoline, but you stand out in front of your house and what do? That looks good. Like I did that right there. I did that. Someone says there's permanence to what I did, and he goes on, verse 5, he keeps going, I made myself pools, or verse 6, from which to water the forest of growing trees. Verse 5, I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. Solomon landscapes with fruit orchards and forests. Like, what's bigger than a forest? Nothing. Which is why you're silent there, okay? Absolutely nothing bigger than... Like, Solomon irrigates with lakes that he has made. The smallest of these lakes, there's three that you can go to Jerusalem today and look at. There's still remnants of them. The smallest one was 280 feet deep, 380 feet wide, and 25 feet deep. That's huge. The biggest one's two times that and 50 feet deep. Solomon says, I did it. I set up these things that I looked at and I said, there's permanence here. Ah. but he doesn't stop his experiment. He keeps going. So next, for his next experiment, he tries acquiring stuff. So he's partied a little bit. He's built some stuff. Now he's going to start amassing things. Verse 7 says this, I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women. Solomon starts getting stuff. He says, you know what, I found the secret to success has got to be doing this, like enjoying life and then building a little bit and then starting to fill what I've got. Solomon says, I got so many slaves that my slaves started having slaves. Solomon's probably like, you know, I got to the point where people cooked the food for me. They brought it to me on a silver platter. I opened my mouth. They put it in and somebody held my jaw and chewed the food for me. I had everything I needed. Okay, at this point, you don't need kitchen gadgets anymore. A QVC is out of business in Solomon's kingdom. There's no need for a power tool. It's going to make your life easier. Solomon's just like, I've got people for that. But not just that, he goes after wealth. He acquires silver and gold. The Bible actually says in 1 Kings, there was so much wealth in Solomon's reign that silver was treated like rocks. I'm going to go play baseball. And we just grab a chunk of silver because, I mean, it's just silver. What? It's amazing. Solomon says, you know what? I had everything I could ever want. I mean, at what point do you say, you know what, I need a little more? Solomon's like, I had everything. Some of us, we look at it and we're like, you know what? I know that phrase, money can't buy happiness, right? I've heard that before. Have you heard that phrase before, money can't buy happiness? But you know what? I just like to see. Like, I'd like to try and see if money can buy happiness. I mean, I believe you in everything, but I'd like to just try it for a little bit because I haven't had that experience. And Solomon says, I did. I had all the money I could ever want, but he's not done with his experiment. Next, he tries experiencing. So up to this point, Solomon has partied, he's built, he's acquired, and now he's going to go after the experience. Like, he tries the arts. He tries fine art, and he fills the silence of his life with music. We do the same thing, don't we? We're at home all by ourselves, and we're scrambling to turn the TV on because it's too quiet. We're in the car, and we can't just sit for a second. We have to turn the radio on or plug our iPod in. We fill the silence with music. And Solomon says, I did too, but I didn't need iTunes. I didn't need Spotify. I didn't need Pandora. Okay. If I liked some music, I got it. The band, not the song. I bought the band and brought them to my house. Solomon did not want for the arts. I got singers, verse 8, both men and women. He also tried other experiences. Many concubines, the delight of the children of men. This is a description of Solomon's 300 concubines. That's 300 women that were basically girlfriends. We also know that he had 700 wives. That's 1,000 women. Solomon tries to experience pleasure in every form. And catch this, Solomon did not lack for shape, size, eye color, hair color, personality. Solomon ran out of fantasies. Some men, they try and amass a virtual harem with all the pornography they look at on the internet. And Solomon says, I didn't need a computer and an internet connection. I didn't have to wait till the house was empty or my wife was in bed. I had 1,000 women anytime I wanted, day or night. Solomon laughs at our society because he had it all. And we think through how much our society pursues these things, the experience. And Solomon says, well, you know, I tried it already. You don't have to run that fast towards that. I already have the end of the road answer for you. He tries experience, and then he tries achieving. achieving. He says, I got the promotion. I got recognized. I was better. I was smarter. I worked harder. I did it all. Look at verse number 9. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. I tried for it all, and I got it all. I experienced everything. I achieved everything. I knew everything that I could know. Everything I wanted, I had. You want the best? Solomon says. You want the respect of your friends and your peers. You want that promotion. You want to be paid more. You want people to notice you. Solomon says, I had it. I had it all. He tried achieving. And the amazing thing about all of this, he's at the top and he goes on and he says, look at it. Also, my wisdom remained with me. He never got lost at the top, right? We've seen it happen. We've seen people in our society, seems like they ascend to the top of whatever ladder they want, and then they crash. But Solomon says, I'm up there, and I never lost sight of the experiment. Now, this doesn't mean that he didn't sin, okay? This is not wisdom like the right way to do things according to God. This is just logic. He wasn't sinless when he got drunk. He wasn't pure in his polygamy, okay? Solomon just simply logically looked at the scene in front of him and he never forgot that it was an experiment. So this morning, if you're thinking, experiment? Experiment, eh? Like, I mean, that sounds kind of fun. Okay, Ecclesiastes has already been written, okay? So for you now, that would be sin. Like, no, I just want to try. I just want to see if there's anything good out there. Okay, there's no part two to Ecclesiastes. We've got it. Solomon has already told us, and God has already given his word on the matter. So let me ask you a question. Do you see this in your life? Would you look at your life over the last week? Do you see this in your life? How much are you trying to duplicate this experiment? If someone was to look in on your life, would they write something similar about you? They went to college, they goofed off a little bit, and they decided to make something of themselves. They went to work a lot, and then at the end of the day, they came home and they loved to watch this show. They finally finished the series of that show, and it was great. And then they got some stuff. They found somebody to marry. They got married. They had a family. They bought a house. They got stuff. What does your experiment look like? How are you trying to duplicate this experiment? And you see, there's no part two. Solomon's already done it. It's like a friend has something that smells funky, right? And they smell it, and they're like, whoa! And you're like, here, let me smell. Right? Okay, just, you don't have to raise your hand. We've all done that, right? Okay? Like, I've done it with socks before, okay? Like, like, what am I thinking I'm going to find when I, like, smell that sock? Oh, yep, smells. Yep, there it is. We do the same thing with life, don't we? Yeah, I know, I've heard, but I just want to see. I just want to try. I mean, for me, partying, building, experiencing, achieving, I'll do it different. I'll get something that Solomon, no. Solomon's experiment is done, and he's wiser than you, and he has more power than you, and he has more resources than you, and he's going to look you straight in the eyes, and he's going to give you God's results right now. So this experiment, Solomon's done. He's at the end of it. He says, I got to the top. I was able to look at everything. Now I'm going to give you the data from my experiment. And this is both Solomon's experiment and God's revealed, inspired word on the matter. So you ready? It's the raw data. Let's look at these just simple results. What is the secret to satisfaction? What's the end of the experiment? What's the data, Solomon? Here's the data. Nothing under the sun gives satisfaction. Nothing. Look at verse 10. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil. So remember, I told you that Solomon's going to be honest with us. Here's his raw data. He's not giving any conclusions about it yet. He's just throwing out the facts. You ready? Here's the data after he did all the experiments. The first piece of data is, he said, I kept my heart from no pleasure, and my heart found pleasure in that. That's not what we hear, right? Like, this might shock you a little bit. Most of the time, we hear things like, well, you know, it looks fun, but it's not. It's actually horrible. Someone's like, you know what? I tried it, and actually, it was pleasurable. We like to think that everybody who doesn't believe and live like we are, like, walks around with a perpetual frown on their face, okay? Walking around, like, just hitting things, hating life, and kicking puppies. Like, they just hate it. I mean, they look fun, but it's not fun. And Solomon says, oh, it's fun. Look, I did. I had fun. I tried it all. I did, and it was enjoyable, but catch this. Do not miss this next part. I looked at everything that I had fun, and there was still something that troubled me. You know what it was? Here's his raw data, fact number one. Pleasure is pleasurable, but you still want more. Haven't we seen this? I mean, Solomon says, if it felt good, I tried it. And chances are good that Solomon tried every vice. Anything I saw that I wanted, I tried, and it was enjoyable. But I still wanted more. In the end, it was still empty. Verse 11, then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil that I had expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. In the end, he says, I've done everything that there is to do, and I'm back in the same place where I started. Still feeling empty, still feeling like life is boring, feeling like it's a little bit predictable, and I'm quite frustrated by it. So obviously, sinful pleasure, right? Pleasure that disobeys God's commands is not given satisfaction from God. We all catch that, right? But Solomon's saying here that even permitted pleasures, even the things within God's will, if they are done apart from him, right? He says this over and over again, under the sun, put the bowl over earth. If it's just experienced down here, it doesn't fill up what is lacking for us, and we still end up looking for more. And as hard as we go in either direction, right? Sinful pleasure, permitted pleasure, as hard as we go in either direction, we will still end up empty. Solomon looked back at what he did. He said, I saw nothing of profit, and we hopefully are beginning to see the same thing. Pleasure is pleasurable, but that's it. You will always want more. And it will trouble you. It will eat you up inside. And here's result number one for you, okay? And it really is. It stops us in our tracks because a lot of what we spend our time on fits under result number one, doesn't it? But he goes on. So pleasure is pleasurable, but you always want more. I see that. I get it, okay? But what about taking those next steps and making wise choices, right? Like, what if I don't waste my time? What if I make good choices? What if I live wisely? Result number two. He begins to say, verse 12, I turn to consider wisdom and madness and folly. So what if I make good choices? Okay, here's the thing. Solomon says, it is good to have wisdom. In the same way that it is better to walk through a room with the lights on instead of off, right? Would we all agree with this, that this is a good thing? Wisdom is fine. Now, I always struggle with this, okay? I am horrible at walking through dark rooms, okay? Like this frame, these feet, they hit everything. If I've ever hit you, like, it's not my fault. They just go, okay? So it's even worse when we have small children in the house, like young kids. So I would try and be super dad when we had Karis when she was really young, and now that we've got Andre at the house, and I just want to be super dad. So the slightest cry, like I just burst out of bed. I want to help the situation, you know? So like slightest cry, burst out of bed. I've been known to run across a dark room, and I don't want to wake up, so I'm keeping my eyes closed. It's dark anyways. Keep my eyes closed, jump up, run out of bed, like boom, right into a closed door. Yes, light is helpful, right? Yeah. Light is, it's helpful when walking through dark rooms. And Solomon says the same exact thing. Look at verse 14. There is more gain in wisdom than in folly, as there is more gain in light than in darkness. The wise person has his eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. I mean, this is abundantly clear. It is better to ask questions like, what is going to happen if I light this bottle rocket inside, than to just go for it? Okay? It's better to ask, you know, if I don't go into work for the next 4 days without calling in, what's going to happen? Rather than just doing it. Okay? It's better to make wise choices. But at the end of the day, here's something that struck Solomon. You can be really smart, and you can make wise choices, and you can do everything right on the path of life. But I perceived that the same event happens to all of them. So here's result number two. Wisdom is helpful, but you still die like a fool. So it's great to make wise choices, but you're still going to die like a fool. Solomon introduces a great equalizer here. And this is the equalizer that really shakes him to his core. It's what Shakespeare in Hamlet said. Death is the great equalizer. It puts us all on the same playing field, because no matter how high we ascend, we will all descend 6 feet under. Solomon says, you're going to die. You cannot escape it. No matter how much you try and ignore it, no matter how much you try and push it away, wisdom, right choices cannot insulate you from death. And you can eat all the spinach that you want, but that's not going to stop you from dying. Solomon says, in the end, wisdom is helpful, but you still die like a fool. And as often as we face death, I mean, it happens all around us. Like, it's on the news constantly. As often as we face it, we don't ever think it's coming for us. Right? Especially when we're young. Oh, it happens all the time, but not me. Solomon says, I looked at all that I had with the wisdom, the right choices, the knowledge. I was smarter than anybody, but something hit me. I'm going to die just like the fool. I got all the way to the top. I was better than everybody else. I was smarter. I worked hard to get all this, and I'm going to die just like the idiot that never studied or tried. This poor guy needs a hug, right? Solomon says, wisdom is helpful, but you still die like a fool. But death doesn't just equalize us. It also takes all of our stuff. So Solomon looks at what he's worked for and what he's acquired, and he gives us result number three. Result number three is this: work is productive, but you still leave it all behind. As hard as we work to acquire things and then to control, catch this, because this is where we're all at, we may not have much, but I really want to control and protect what I've got. As much as he worked to get stuff and then control and protect what he had, one thing ripped it away from his hands. Verse number 17, I looked at all I had done to get it, and I despaired. I hated life. In fact, the more he thought about what he had, the more he despaired. In other words, he said, you're never going to lay your head on the pillow at night and close your eyes and smile and say, ah, I am so happy. Look at my car. Look at my bank account. Look at my house. Look at my trophy wife. Look at this. Look at everything I got. You're never going to do that. Solomon says the more you have, the more you're going to worry about what you have. For instance, right now, I am not worried about my new BMW getting stretched in the parking lot. Not. Because I don't have a new BMW, okay? Some of you are like, what are we paying this guy? Okay. Nope, I drive a bit of a beater, okay? It gets me around, but you know, if you don't push just the right buttons on the AC controls, the cabin is filled with lethal fumes. Okay? Just got to keep it just right. Like, people drive my car, I warn them, you know. I don't worry about scratching it or denting it because it's got plenty of those little guys already. But if you give me a new BMW M3, like the one I saw in the parking lot, nice white with black rims, if you give me that, suddenly, you know what? I'm going to worry about every scratch. Suddenly, I'm gonna get up tight about where it is. I'm going to worry about where I park. I'm going to start to think, you know, I don't like the kids riding their bikes too close to it, right? Stuff is fine, but in the end, in and of itself, it doesn't bring us rest, does it? Work is productive. Yes, it's good to work, but work in and of itself, work under the sun, only gets you stuff that you will worry about, and then you will die, and then you'll worry about the person that gets your stuff if they're going to appreciate it or not. Someone says work is worry, and we're like, duh. Yeah, work. It's productive. It's productive, but no, you're just going to have to give everything you got to somebody else to enjoy. And it's full of anxiety. And Solomon puts it this way. He says, you cannot keep thinking that what will satisfy is more of what you already have. But we do. We keep thinking, I will be happy if I could just have more of what I already have. You'll never be satisfied with more of what you already have. It doesn't work that way. Pleasure, it's pleasurable, but you'll always want more. Wisdom is helpful, just like lights in a room are helpful, but you're still going to die like a fool. Work is productive. You're going to get stuff, but you're going to die, and you're going to leave it to somebody that's not going to appreciate it. Solomon says, here's my raw data. Nothing under the sun satisfies. So here's another message in Ecclesiastes, and here's another really sad, dismal outcome, right? Well, there's my life. I'm going to live. I'm going to get some stuff. I'm going to be satisfied or dissatisfied with what I get, and then I'm going to die. It's not pretty. But you know what? It's actually good that it's not pretty, isn't it? Did you think about this for a second? It's actually not supposed to be pretty. Like if something's wrong, it's not supposed to feel right, is it? That's the way life works. Solomon says life apart from God, life under the sun is without profit, advantage, without pleasure. It's evil, it's full of vexation, and it keeps me up at night. It's like on the dashboard of Solomon's life, warning lights are going off all over the place, right? Life is empty, alert, alert. Something's broken here, alert, alert. Something needs to be fixed here, alert, alert. And Solomon has so many warning lights in his life that he can't ignore them anymore, and he can't cover them up with any more post-it notes. Okay? He can't pull the light out of the little light in the back. That's a trick I've heard before. Oh yeah, you got your check engine light, just pull the light out. It's good. Fine. He can't do that anymore. It is consuming him. So Solomon, what's your conclusion? Take that raw data and then put your wisdom matched with the inspiration of God into this and conclude this for us. Because I don't know about you, but I would just much rather be done right now. Like just, if this is what it is, then it's over. But Solomon gives us a conclusion because there's something better. Look at verse 24. Solomon, what is your conclusion? Verse 24, there is nothing better for a person. Now, the wording here is a little bit jumbly because of how the Hebrew works. Okay, here's what I think it means in the context. That word better there can be translated inherently good. So there is nothing inherently good in a person that he can eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. Isn't that what he's been saying? There is nothing intrinsic in you to really enjoy the things of this earth for any length of time. And his evidence is all of us and everything, right? We all agree with that. Remember his little experiment? But this next part is a little bit more difficult because here's what he says. Keep reading verse 24. There is nothing in a person to eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil.
"This also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment?" Catch this, watch this. God gives gifts to all men. Everything comes from God. So whether you believe in God or not this morning, you are breathing, living, walking, and wearing his stuff. Right? All gifts come from God. Food, drink, clothing, work, time. It's all a gift from your Creator to you. He gives gifts to all, but, this is what the text is saying, only the children of God, only those who believe in Jesus Christ alone for their hope and satisfaction receive that gift of satisfaction. Why is that? Well, the Bible says, for to the one, verse 26, for to the one who pleases him. So to the one who lives a life pleasing to God, which I'm not saying is just doing right stuff or going to church more or cleaning up your life or fixing stuff yourself. That's not what the Bible says. It says those who please him. For the ones who are sincere, honest followers of Jesus, our satisfaction is not tied to stuff. They are two separate things. Two separate things. The gifts that God gives and then the satisfaction in those gifts are two separate things. So Solomon, what is your conclusion? He answers the question, what is the secret to satisfaction? And he goes through his experiment and he says, you know, here's what I found. I found that nothing under the sun gives satisfaction. Nothing. So what's the conclusion for us, Solomon? Are you just going to leave us there? No, he says this. He says, God alone gives satisfaction to those who please him. Verse 26, look at it. For to the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. Man in himself does not have what it takes to get satisfaction out of this earth. God alone gives it. I mean, it's like you could say it this way. Man ain't got it. You heard that before? He ain't got it. He's up at the bat. He's up the bat, and his knees are knocking, and the pitch goes by him three times. Whoo, whoo. He ain't got it. Man does not have what it takes, and we have to get used to the fact that if we are to receive satisfaction from anything under the sun, that satisfaction, like all satisfaction, only comes from the hand of God. It won't come from anywhere else. God alone give satisfaction to those who please him. So it's like this. Okay, Pierre got a can of peaches. Okay. It's like everyone, when they are born, gets a can of peaches. They're nice, right? Georgia peaches, actually. So go Annie, right? Georgia peaches. They're delicious. We all love peaches, but what do we need? We need a can opener, right? So when God gives life to a person, he gives them a can of peaches. Who has the can opener? God. God is the only one with a can opener. And yet we live our life and we see the picture of the peach and we're like, that looks so good. And some of us, we get a lot of cans of peaches. Some of us, our cans of peaches are diamond encrusted and they're really shiny. But the more we live, the more we look at the can of peaches and we look at the peach on the outside, and peaches taste good, but cans taste horrible. Okay? So we live our life and we're just gnawing on this can and we're like, we're frustrated with the can. We're just like beating the can on things and it's not opening. And we beat it on our own heads and we beat it on other people's heads and we're like, why can't I get to the peaches? I mean, look at them. They're so delicious. And we start looking at our life and we're like, I hate my job, I hate my life, I hate my peaches for sure. This whole thing, I hate it all. I despair, I toil, life under the sun stinks. God's like, I got a can opener. Oh yeah, I need to open it. Right? And that's the secret to satisfaction, guys. God gives you stuff, but he's the only one that can give you satisfaction for that stuff. His gifts
and the satisfaction of those gifts are two different things. You see, when we go to Him and we take our can of peaches and we say, God, would you open this? That's what He's after. What we keep doing then is we're like, well, I'm not satisfied with my spouse, so I need to get a new one. And we try and add cans of peaches. I want a new job. I got to get a new one. So we add more cans of peaches. And all the while, we're thinking that the cans can be opened apart from God. And God is the only one with the can opener. For to the one who pleases Him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. So then the question comes, what pleases God? Like, how do I please God? If I've got to please God to come to Him, then how do I please Him? Would you catch this? The book of Hebrews chapter 11 says this. Without faith, it is impossible to please Him. For those that come to God must draw near to Him and believe that He exists and that He rewards those who seek Him. So how do you please God? Faith. Without it, you cannot please Him. What does faith look like? Well, faith looks like what it says in Hebrews 11. It says, you must believe that He exists and that He's a rewarder of those that seek Him. So what does that mean? It means God says, I want you to bring the cans of peaches to me. I want you to believe that I will open them and give you life. I want you to come to me for a relationship. I'm not interested in giving you stuff so you can just have it by yourself. I actually want you with me. Like, I want a relationship with me. So instead of just trying to open that thing by yourself, instead of trying to bang it on stuff, and instead of trying to be so strong yourself, just come like a child. Just hand me the can. Let me open it. And I saw this in an incredible way. What pleases God? Most of you guys know that Beth and I are foster parents, and it has been the hardest thing we've ever done and the best thing we've ever done. God has been given tons and tons of grace. But I was thinking, okay, we got this little two-year-old guy. He's at our house. It's been really great. What pleases us about this guy? Like, you know, he really contributes nothing to our family, okay? He's mostly just, like, snotty-nosed, whines because he can't talk yet, hits us when we tell him no, gets up in the middle of the night, poops his pants, really little to no contribution to our family, okay? But somehow, that little guy still pleases me. So we're having community group on Wednesday night, and we finished it up, and the house is still full of our community group, and Beth brings the little guy back to our house. She comes in the door, and I'm over in the corner talking to some people. And she puts Andre down on the floor. I watched it happen. I was kind of talking and kind of watching. And then Andre, he walks around 6 or 7 different people. And he finds me. And he hugs me. And I melted. And you're like, it's a kid. He's hugging you. Well, you don't understand. You see, this little guy, he's had some tough stuff in his life. And so up to this point in his life, adults don't pay him much attention. In fact, the only way he can get adults to pay attention to him is if he does the things that he does. So why did I melt? I mean, that pleased me. Why? Because in that moment, he let go of his old way of independent survival and trusted that I wanted him to come over and give me a hug. A little snotty-nosed 2-year-old diligently sought me out and believed that I would reward him with a hug and a kiss. And I did. What pleased me? The fact that that little guy wanted a relationship with me. And if you've got little kids, the same's true in your house, right? I mean, like this? Like toast. Whatever day I've had. And God says, I will give you the secret of satisfaction. When you come to me like a child, when you believe that I exist, when you stop trying to bring your own strength, when you stop trying to figure out life on your own, because actually the Bible calls that sin. The Bible says when we live life apart from God, trying to do it in our own strength, it is sin. And the end of sin is death. So this morning, what pleases God is you admitting that I have no ability to find satisfaction. I have no ability to find life apart from this God. Admit that you are a sinner and that the way that you live your life is complete and total sin. Admit that and come to him like a child. And Solomon says, you're going to die. You're going to die. Face this. If you get this question wrong, you are in really, really big trouble. Eternity is at stake. Keep going. Look at what he says to close the chapter. Verse 26. To the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner, to the one who does not please him, to the one who does not put his enjoyment, God's enjoyment, over their own, he gives the business of gathering and collecting only to give to the one who pleases God. The sinner, the one who doesn't please God, is busy all his life and then has nothing at the end. Life is vanity in the end. Like, they have nothing before God. This also, it says, is vanity and a striving after wind. They get before God and they say, God, here's what I have. And they go to grab it and they have nothing. To the one who does not please God, he gives the business of gathering and collecting only to give to the one who pleases God, which sounds a lot like the meek shall inherit the earth, doesn't it? So for us this morning, for those who hear God's word today, would you catch this? Those who don't please God have nothing in the end, but to those who please him, because of the cross of Jesus Christ, because God came, died in the flesh, those who please him, put their faith in him, can find eternal life. Those who don't please him must watch and have nothing in the end. So today, let me ask you a question. The experiment is done. The data is collected. How do you respond to God's word?